We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
We welcome in Bill Simmons. Bill, welcome. How are you?
What a pleasure, Mike. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
I don't know. Freaking out about my Celtics.
That's what I want to start with. That's what we let's start. First of all, let's before we get to that, tell me what's new in your life, if anything, and then we'll get to the Celtics. Anything new?
We're at month 11 of the ringer.com, which is, I don't know, we have a bunch of people working for us now. Big sports and pop culture site, big podcast network, doing video, all that stuff. It's been
a dream come true. You're doing videos. How many videos? Do you do one a week, two a week? How many videos you do a week?
We're pumping out probably like 6, 7, 8.
How about you personally?
Or YouTube?
Are you doing 6, 7, 8 yourself?
No, I'm not in them. We're making them our creative team. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So are you doing any podcasts yourself?
I am. I have my podcast, which I just did. Had my 200th last week. We passed over 100 million downloads. The Bill Simmons podcast.
Good.
And it's been fun, the whole podcast universe. I know you're thinking about dipping your toes in it,
well,
right?
I promised these guys I wouldn't spend a lot of time on what's the future might hold, but I have met with a couple of these companies, and they've, you know, formulating some things for me, so I'm just kind of, they've just, you know, some have made me some preliminary offers and stuff like that, but I'm not down the road yet, to be honest with you. I'm still learning about the process, to be honest with you.
We have to have a business meeting.
We do.
How great would that be?
Well, come on. You know, it's funny. At FrancescaCon, the most popular thing there was that I was going to be working for you in the future. That was the most popular decision from all the people there.
I think I'll be working
there
for you.
I don't know. Well, either way, it will work out. Okay. Now, all right, let's get to the Celtics. First of all, going into the series, and I can't tell you, I have to tell you, I didn't give the series a lot of thought where I said, I'm worried, I'm this, I'm not. I didn't think about it. And then I watched game one and I said, my God, this is a matchup nightmare for the Celtics. What did you think going in?
So I actually went on our Ringer NBA Show podcast on Friday and made the whole long point about that. I didn't think this was a very good Celtics team. I would have been super worried if they played Miami as the 8 seed. But basically I was like, thank God it's Chicago. They're never losing to Chicago. Fred Hoiberg can never win a playoff series. I have all these terrible things that I said. I did not see it coming. Isaiah Thomas and his sister's tragic death, like, it unquestionably changed the Celtics going into that game.
I don't think there's any question.
This is a bad matchup.
It was anyway, though.
It's a bad matchup anyway.
It's a bad basketball matchup. They can't rebound well, and they don't have the best player on the floor, and they're getting killed in the backcourt.
Yeah, so I went to game one, and, you know, it was a big question leading up to that game. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play?
Right.
He's crying, and not only just a couple hours before the game, but in the pregame intros. He went to the corner, and he was crying during that.
Horrific.
My kids were sitting 10 feet away from him, and this guy's crying. He's about to start playing the game.
Horrific.
The energy was off, and the Bulls didn't care. They have veteran guys.
Yep.
They did not feel bad about the situation. They shouldn't have. They're trying to win a playoff game. Came out super physical. And I got to say, like, being there and watching in person, which I think you can always pick up a couple things versus being just
watching
on TV.
Like, no question.
Rondo knew every play that was coming, and he's jumping passing lanes, and he's screwing up plays, and he's basically like, oh, they're doing this, I'm going to go here. And the combination of that and Robin Lopez and the size they had, guys, they had two straight games where bench guys that don't play well.
Oh, Portis killed
them
in game one. Portis killed them.
And then the German in game two.
Yes. Yep.
So,
every time in game two where it seemed like the Celtics were finally revving it up, 36 up, 60-59, they were like, okay, let's go score 8 in a row now. Okay, now here's our answer. Boom, boom, boom.
Right.
Now we're down 10 again. So every time I'm watching a game, and every time I thought, all right, the Celtics got a little momentum, they would just give them the back of their hand and put 6 straight points up.
Totally. And, you know, this was a pretty flawed Celtics team. And, you know, I'm a huge Celtics fan. I never thought this was a team that should be a 1 seed.
No, obviously.
But you know, they had 12, 13 games during the season that they probably could have lost, and Isaiah just put his Superman cape on and won the fourth quarter. And the difference this time around, you know, he was off, understandably. I felt terrible for him for two straight games, but they just have no plan B. I mean, I was sitting there in game one, and they can't generate any offense unless he's on the court. I'm saying to my dad's having a heart attack watching. I'm like,
yep.
we might have to play Gerald Green. And he's like, yeah, we might have to. Like, Gerald Green's like the 13th man on this team.
Well, they basically tried everybody.
Right. And I think, you know, everybody was confused why the Celtics didn't do anything at the trade deadline, myself included.
Right.
I think some of the trades that people thought were on the table were not. I don't think
Indiana
ever.
What do you think the best realistic trade on the table could have been?
Well, I think they could have gotten Serge Ibaka. I think they could have gotten Bojan Bogdanovic. They could have gotten guys that made, you know, the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th spots.
But they couldn't get George, right? They weren't getting George, right?
Paul George is not on the table, and this is like, it turns into almost like the sports version of fake news,
right?
Where I'm getting emails and tweets from people, and they're like, oh, it's your fault. You didn't trade for Paul George. It's like, we didn't trade for Russell Westbrook either. Like, hey, these guys aren't on the table. I think what happened at the trade deadline was the Lakers, not knowing if the Lakers were going to have their pick or not, made these teams really smartly decide to wait until the summer. Because if you're Chicago and the Lakers have a top three pick and the Celtics have a top three pick, and you can play them off each other for Jimmy Butler, same thing for Indiana with Paul George, like, you have to wait for that. It didn't make sense for those teams to trade.
I totally agree. Let me ask you this. We're talking with Bill Simmons, of course. About the Celtics, is there anybody on that team that is going to get angry enough to look his teammates in the face and say, listen, we just got embarrassed, and now Rondo wants to basically just mortify us, as he said when they said they quit leaving the floor in game two.
Yeah.
The bottom line is there anybody who has that kind of temperament on that Celtic team?
Yeah, it's a whole team of guys that overachieved and have been counted out and have a chip on their shoulder. I mean, I think that's what made the last couple years special. It's, you just go on down the line, all guys that either were supposed to be good and fell out of the lottery, or guys that were never given
a chance.
So
you think they'll get angry in game three?
I don't know, because the difference in this situation is Isaiah is the lifeblood of the team.
Right.
He just is. And if he's off and if he's whatever he's going through, you just don't know. And they don't have a plan B. It has to be him. They're not a very good team. And I think, you know, even I look back now at the trade deadline, I think the Celtics knew it. I think they knew they didn't have a great team.
Oh, I think they know that. See, that's why I don't think anybody's going to be stunned internally. I just made that point just a couple minutes ago, Bill. I don't think anybody inside the Celtics is going to be stunned if they lose this series, where they're going to say, oh, we thought we were this. I think they realize they're not that good.
I will say, though, Mike, they've been resilient the last couple of years, and there's been moments, especially this year, like they're on a West Coast trip this year, and they weren't playing well, and they're going into Golden State, and it looked like the season was starting to go in the wrong direction. And then they beat Golden State in Golden State.
I remember.
Every time you count them out, that's the game when they
can you see them coming back in this series?
Absolutely.
You can.
I absolutely could. I think they will?
Watching games one and two, and just forget the uniforms, just watching games one and two, they look as dead could possibly be. I mean, the matchups are terrible. They don't look like they have any chance to rebound the basketball. They look like that. It looks almost like Rondo was toying with them at the end of game two.
I think they made the same mistake OKC made in the Houston series, where their best chance is going to be to go small and just to kind of ramp up the pace a little bit and make threes. The Celtics, if they don't make threes, they're not going to get out of round one anyway. So you got to gamble on that a little bit. But OKC is the same thing. Like, I thought OKC was playing the wrong lineups and the wrong combinations, especially last night. And the Celtics, same thing. There were guys, he played 13 guys in two games, and I'm not even sure he was playing the right guys. I would have gone smaller and tried to beat them with a little more speed and shooting. OKC, you know, their advantage against Houston is not like throwing Cantor out there, which they already learned in game two, but I think they're better off putting shooters around Westbrook and not putting Westbrook in a situation where he feels like it's a good idea to shoot 43 times.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable.
Have you ever seen that in your life?
No, it's not even, you know, and my kids get into it because they're like, oh, we got to watch Westbrook and Harden. And I'm like, guys, this is not basketball. This is not basketball.
No, it's and he played for the first 2.5 quarters of that game. I thought he was remarkable. Like, I really thought it was.
He is remarkable.
For being,
you know,
yeah,
what?
I thought
he,
it was.
He is
I remarkable. Thought he was putting together one of the great games.
He is remarkable. His effort that he gives is unbelievable. It really is.
Yeah,
The intensity.
He loses it.
Yeah, he does. The effort that he gives is utterly on every play. And the only other guy I ever thought that about recently is LeBron. There's times we just say the effort is just so overwhelming. Westbrook's effort is just amazing. The amount of energy he has is remarkable.
And his resilience and all that stuff. The problem is, in a game like last night, you're not going to beat a good team by yourself.
Nope.
He's not.
You can't.
And you're not going to beat a good team if you don't trust your teammates. He didn't. And I, to me, it's like it's a chicken and egg thing a little bit where people are like, well, his teammates aren't good. And it's like, well, I've been watching basketball my whole life. If you don't trust your teammates and you never pass to them unless you have to and you're doing everything – and then they're just expected, the moment you decide it's okay for them to shoot, then they have to make the shot. That's not a way to play. Like, they were up 16-4 in the beginning of that game. Westbrook was distributing. Guys were playing well. Like, they have to play, you know, as a five-man unit. The one-man thing just doesn't work. There were guys open that whole fourth quarter. McDermott was playing well. Like, McDermott made 4 or 5.
43 shots is insanity.
Nobody since 1984 – since they started keeping track, at least on Basketball Reference, on the site I checked, nobody had taken that many shots in a game.
I mean,
nobody,
Harden,
not one playoff performer.
Think about this: Harden scored 35 points; he took 17 shots.
Right, and you know, and people will say, "Well, he has a better team." Yeah, the team probably fits better around him. But that, you know, OKC has guys like Oladipo, almost basically signed a max contract. Kanter signed a $75 million deal. Adams, coming out of the playoffs last year, was considered to be either the best young center in the league or one of the best young centers. Robertson was considered to be the best young swingman defender we had. McDermott was a lottery pick. These are guys that have talent. They're not busts, and it's his job to figure out how to make them better. And when he just goes one-man show, I mean, you know, Barkley takes a lot of crap these days, and some of it is fair and some of it's not fair. But a lot of times coming into that show, when you after a game like that, when you watch Kenny and Barkley and Shaq, and they do the old guys who used to play on the couch thing, and sometimes it really rings true when they're upset about something. Those guys were, to them, it wasn't basketball.
It wasn't
felt
for me
the same
either.
Way we felt.
No, that's
like,
how
what
I was trying
this?
To tell
I'm
my
not
kids.
I'm celebrating this.
I was trying to tell my kids this isn't good. This isn't, and they're like, "Dad, come on, look at this. This is awesome. Come on, he might get 50. I'm like, this is not basketball. This is not the way it's supposed to be played. And then the one thing in the East, and I want to get back to the Celtics with Bill in a minute, but Washington, that backcourt, that's the real threat to Cleveland. And that backcourt, and I know they supposedly hate each other, and I've heard that. I don't know that, but I've heard that.
I don't know if that's
They
true.
Have meshed into a wonderful, classic backcourt now. When one is speed and fire and the other one is a great shooter and they're splitting 60 points and playing defense and doing – that's a dangerous team right now with that backcourt, especially if Porter plays well. That's a dangerous basketball team.
And I really like Toronto, too. I know Toronto threw people off with how the Bucks are a nightmare. They're young and they're long and they're weird, and Giannis is unlike anyone in the league, and I think they really struggled with their length and athleticism. I think any team against playing the Bucks would struggle with that. I still like Toronto's, the flexibility they have, the way they can play defense when they have to. To me, the playoffs eventually comes down to defense. It's what decides every series.
Defense, and you got to make a shot when it counts.
And you need a shot maker,
you
right.
You got to have a shot maker, yes.
So Washington's flaw was, you know, defensively their best lineup is when Bogdanovich is out there.
Yep.
And, you know, against the wrong team, you can't play him. Like, if they play the Warriors in a series, you can't play Bogdanovich because he can't guard Durant. Like, Durant's going to have 60 points.
Nobody's beating the Warriors anyway.
But
they could give Cleveland
but I'm saying for the East,
They could give Cleveland some problems, though, from this standpoint, because Cleveland's defense has gotten so bad now. LeBron has to give up a little on defense for the first time in his career. He can't be the do-everything defender anymore and still give you all those minutes. So Wall's going to cause trouble, and Wall's finally learned how to harness his speed and learned how to play through it without taking nightmarish shots the whole game. So he's become a much better player now. So he's learned how to harness
I'm
that.
With you.
Yeah.
I really like that Wizards team. I saw them in person a couple weeks ago. They lost to the Clippers. But Wall's speed and athleticism, and I wrote this last week in my MVP column, he's basically Westbrook without the press.
He's become
when
a really
see him
good
in person,
player. Yes.
He's breathtaking to watch in person. He
so
might be
fast.
The fastest guy I've ever seen in my
so
life.
So fast.
And against Cleveland, you know, you look at the history of older teams that have the old famous on-off switch, and the teams that have been able to turn it up in the playoffs and turn back the switch are usually teams that have some basis of defensive identity. Like, I think the 2010 Celtics are a good example where I think they were like 25-25 in their last 50 games, and they turned it on. But, you know, you can turn it on when you have Kevin Garnett as the anchor, and Paul Pierce and Rondo and guys who knew where to go and what to do. I watched this Cleveland team. No lead is safe with them.
The defense
they're entertaining
is terrible.
As hell to watch, but they're up 15 with 4 minutes left. The lead's not safe. The other team could score 10 in a row and come back.
They have fallen
so
far
good.
Defensively. Yeah. It's scary. We're talking with Bill Simmons. Let me get back to the Celtics for two things. One, tell me, what is the city's reaction, and is it realistic or unrealistic, the city's reaction to the Celtics?
I think people really love this team, and you could feel it in that game. The game was really emotional. You know, he hit a three early on there from 28, 29 feet, and the crowd got as loud as I've heard. I mean, I've been to some unbelievable Celtic games, most of the relevant Bird games, all that stuff. I was there for a lot of the 2008, 2002, the comeback Nets. When Isaiah hit that three, it was about as loud as I've ever heard him there. I mean, it was such a release, and people love that guy. And that's the thing from the outside of the country, I don't think people really fully see it because you wouldn't know. But, you know, he's starting to take on this David Ortiz type of
He's that popular in the town. He's that popular,
He is the most popular guy that I think they have ever had with little kids.
Really?
You know? Yeah, I really do. I mean, Bird doesn't count. Bird was like a deity. But since Bird... Yeah, he's little, like kids, you know? Kids look at him, and that's like, that's me. I'm the little guy. If I was out there, I would be that guy. And the way that he kept, you know, just pulling fourth quarters out of his butt to help them win, and just how – he had one of the craziest offensive seasons.
Oh, I know.
In the history of the guard position.
It's crazy. And he averaged 10 points a fourth quarter. I mean, he was unbelievable. Yeah. And he made a lot of shots, too. He makes crazy shots, too.
I think there's like six. I looked it up. There's like six guys ever who averaged 28 points a game playing less than 35 minutes, and it's all the guys. It's like, you know, Gervin, Westbrook, all these guys. Like, that's the kind of season he had. So, you know, the thing for me, it's hard to say. All right, how much? Obviously, this stuff, understandably, you know, really affected him. But it's the little stuff. Like, he missed a lot of free throws in those first two games. He was a 90% free throw shooter. That's where you look at it and you go, oh, yeah, this guy's sister just died.
No, that's,
he shouldn't be playing.
That's you just – wait. And there's no way to calculate that. There really isn't.
No, you can't. And as I said, like, if he's affected, then the ceiling of the team just dramatically
How about Stevens handling this? How is he doing with this?
I don't think he played the right guys. I think he made a mistake, especially in the first game. Jaylen Brown, who I think is really talented, and if you look at his stats in his rookie year versus Paul George's stats in Paul George's rookie year, it's basically the same. Like, you're taking a kid 1 year out of college and putting him in the swingman position. Like, they're going to be up and down. But he tried him. He tried Olynyk, who's really been bad for 2 months. He threw Tyler Zeller out there. I didn't really agree with the guys that he was putting faith in. To me, it's like, if you're going to beat this Bulls team, go with like your seven guys who are the least scared and the guys who are just going to be out there, balls to the wall. And, you know, I think Rozier probably should have played more. I would have played Jericho more because Jerebko, I was calling him Jericho. But he's somebody that's been pretty fearless in some big games. And, you know, Gerald Green's another one. Gerald Green's the irrational confidence. I think I'm better than everyone on the court.
Well, you needed someone who wasn't going to get intimidated by Butler in the fourth quarter of that game, because Butler, you know, in the second half just took over and they put up 32 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, the Celtics allowed them to score so many big trips in the fourth quarter. It was crazy.
I'll tell you this, though. Jimmy Butler's really good. I didn't vote for him for All-NBA because it was the deepest pool since I've had a ballot. It was just my fourth team in All-NBA could have arguably been better than the third team. But I just felt like if he's that good, that team basically was a 500 team. I can't support it. Then you watch him in game one, and it's like He's just going to get his 30. He can guard anybody. Like, he's going to – there's going to be a game, I don't know which one in this series, where he's going to guard Isaiah in the last 4 minutes of the game. And there's not a lot of guys who on the one end could be the best swingman scorer in the game, and on the other end guard a 5'7 point guard. So he's really good. Rondo had a great renaissance. Wade still knows what he's doing. Yep. Lopez, who the Knicks basically gave away for Derrick Rose,
yep.
Which was one of the 20 – can we talk about the Knicks?
No, yeah, well, I'll get to the Knicks.
People not care.
No, we'll get to the Knicks, absolutely. But
okay.
You know what, this is – we'll get to them. But, you know, the amazing thing is – you're right. Butler probably, and that year, well, they were so dysfunctional as a team this year, the Bulls,
yep.
That nobody paid attention to them. But Butler,
no.
Butler is that kind of talent. I mean, let's be honest. I know, understand he's fighting about how much he's worth and everything else.
Yeah.
And but he is a legitimately, top player. He is a heck of a player.
No question. And I saw them.
Butler George is not.
Oh, it's an argument.
Yeah. You look
I think Butler's better.
You look at Butler, George, Green, these guys like that. There's all, and Leonard. But those four, right? Someone asked me this the other day. Let me hear you rank them. Rank those four players. I know you're going to put Leonard first, but Leonard, Green, Butler, George, what order would you take them?
I voted Green for Defensive Player of the Year, third team All-NBA, thought about him for second team. I think. Defensively, there's never really been anyone quite like him other than Dennis Rodman, somebody that can be the rim protector, can have these huge momentum swinging blocks in games, but then could also just guard anybody. And the ferocity and intensity he has, I think, is what makes that team special. Like, for them not to lose anything when they were missing Durant for 20 games is really crazy. It's a three-man team with like a couple half-decent bench guys, but they had no rim protection whatsoever. And if it's not for him.
The block he made on Sunday in the Portland game was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh,
and, I think people are starting to see it now after last night. I was thinking this. I actually went and looked to see if I could bet on this, and there's no way to bet on it. But, there's 16-0 potential with this Warriors team.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to happen.
I told people I don't think there's any chance they lose the championship. Any chance. And Cleveland's
going to. They'd have to have an injury.
Cleveland's going to. And I think LeBron's whole frustration, we're talking, of course, with Bill Simmons. LeBron's whole frustration, I thought, was when he went out there and they got schooled in, I think it was January, and he realized, I can't beat that team this year no matter what I do. And they're going to go to the finals, Cleveland, and they're going to get beat in four or five games. I mean, that's what's going to happen.
I think that LeBron thing went a little deeper. And this is, I will fully admit, it's a conspiracy theory. So the blogs aren't allowed to put this in the headline like Simmons thinks. It's just a theory from somebody who watches basketball. I think that was his way of telling them that he thought they should trade Love for Carmelo. I really do. I think he assessed the situation and was just like,
But couldn't he have gotten that done if he wanted to?
I don't know. I don't think that team, as crazy as it sounds, I'm not positive either they don't work that way or he wouldn't want to be the one who made that trade. But, defensively, they're screwed anyway. And then if you look at it like, well, if they're screwed anyway, who's a better offensive player and who's a better fit with Tristan Thompson, Carmelo, or Love? It's a pretty good argument. But that's how I took that. And I think when somebody just keeps talking about how dissatisfied they are with their supporting cast.
Don't you really think he got to a point when he looked at them one night and said, my God, I have no chance against these guys this year?
Yeah, but he's still LeBron, and we said he had no chance last year.
Well, last year he did have a chance, but this year, you got to deal with Durant on top of the other three. I mean, they got four of the top 12 or 13 players in the league on one team.
Right, and you also, the East is so much better this year. They get through this series, Indiana, who's, easily could have won both of those games.
Easily.
And then you go to round two, you're going against Washington, that is just much more athletic than them, that knows they can beat them. They get great, great, great crowds, really, really, really good home crowds now for these games. People just love this team. And guys who aren't scared, you go down the list, it's like there's seven guys in that team who are not going to be fazed when they're playing LeBron in a big game. And, it's a problem.
No question.
So you get by them and you got to play – probably Toronto. It would be Washington in round three. I guess
yes.
They'd play Toronto.
That'll be the fear. That'll be the scare because they could get scared. They could actually. I don't think they get beat, but I tell you, they're going to go to the finals, and the finals. That way ahead of itself, but they're going to be ugly. But go back to those four guys again. Would you take Green over Leonard?
No, Leonard to
you
me.
You got
to
take Leonard.
I almost voted for Leonard for MVP. Yeah, he's unbelievable.
So Leonard Green, and then who would you take, Butler or George?
I'd rather have Butler. I actually think I don't love Paul George as your best guy on a championship team. I think, like, the ideal situation if he was in, you know, like, let's say he's on Boston, he's with Isaiah Thomas. He doesn't have to be the guy offensively. And he's kind of like the rich man's version of Scottie Pippen with MJ. Not to compare Isaiah to MJ, but you know what I mean.
Yep.
I don't know if he's the best guy in a championship team. Jimmy Butler, to me, feels like is a little more of that.
Who do the Celtics want next year? They want Hayward? Is that who they want?
Yeah, there's a lot of Hayward rumors. I mean, Butler, when he went to Butler, Brad Stevens recruited him, but Brad Stevens was recruiting him when nobody else was recruiting him. And I think there's a school of thought that their relationship is just so strong that unless Utah makes a real run here in the West. That
if they get killed in this series, does Stevens take a beating or is it okay?
No, because, I mean, the people around the league that I've talked to looked at those first two games and were like, wow, how did Brad get the number one seed with this team?
No, I agree with that. I just wondered, I'm asking it from a city standpoint. Do they leave him alone?
No.
Or they beat on him up? They like him up there?
I don't think anybody thought this was a real championship.
I would hope not.
And I think, really, they're in this unbelievable situation where they have this Brooklyn pick that has, I think it's like a 25% chance of being one.
Yep.
It's got a 67% chance of being in the top three. And then they have Brooklyn's pick again next year.
Oh, please.
They have all these other assets. They have a lot of salary cap flexibility.
They're on their way to big things, yeah.
Yeah, and Fultz is a potential franchise best guy in the championship team kind of guy. I mean, he really does seem like he's a sure thing.
There's good players in this draft. I mean, they obviously don't need a Fox, but Fox is going to be a really good pro. Really good pro.
I love Fox.
Fox is a lot like Wall. He's like a refined Wall. Not as fast, but a refined Wall. He can play. He's going to be a really good pro.
And he's already an A-lister defensively. And that's why, like, you know, the people barely cover these ping pong coin flips. So, like, I didn't even know that the Knicks and Timberwolves – first of all, how's that on TV? The Knicks and Timberwolves are flipping for the sixth pick or however they do it.
Yep.
And then in classic Knicks fashion, they lose.
Of course they lose.
So now they're seven. And it's like you look at this draft, and I think there's six, and then it drops off a little.
Of course it does.
This could be Curry, Jordan Hill all over again.
Of course it does. What else is new?
The team is so snake bit. Oh my God.
Well, hold it there. We're going to come back with Bill Simmons and talk about the Knicks. But first, let's get a break in right now. Go ahead. Bill Simmons with us. All right, Knicks, go ahead. Take it away.
Wow. You know, I'm supposed to hate the Knicks because they're a New York team and I'm from Boston. And we've never really been rivalries because the Knicks just have not been successful other than a couple short stretches. But, like, even when I did something with Russell many, many years ago, 2012, like, I brought up the Knicks. He just started laughing.
Yeah.
Like, we beat them every time. They weren't our rival. Like, it was ridiculous.
It was only during those Cowens, Havlicek days. Those were it. That was it.
You had Cowens, you had the one Bernard King year,
right,
and then you had the 1 year when Ewing beat them in the Garden with the three, and that's really it.
That's it.
Riley's bully ball era, the Celtics were fading away at that point. But it's just, you know, it's incompetence, it's really poor ownership, it's bad luck.
How about Phil?
It's a lack of a plan. It's Phil Jackson who, you know, if Philly takes Porzingis instead of Okafor, Phil Jackson's has it been 3 years now?
Yep.
Would have to rank them on the worst three-year stretches in the history of the NBA.
Are you surprised by Phil Jackson's lack of ability here?
I am not. And, in fact, I was on the ESPN show that spring when they hired him, and I felt like I was in the minority on this, but I was like, how do we know? I know the Knicks fans are fired up. He's the link to Bradley and DeBuscher and Willis, all these guys. He's had a lot of success. I get it. None of this means he'll be a good front office executive. He's going to – at that point, it seemed like he was going to be bi-coastal. And I'm like, it's a really hard job to run a team. That's what makes it absurd when, like, Doc Rivers tries to coach and run the Clippers at the same time. This is a full-time job. The Celtics have two GMs. They have Danny Ainge and Mike Zarin. You know, Mike Zarin's the assistant, but he's a full-fledged GM who does all the GM stuff for them too. And for Phil to think that this was just, hey, we're going to bring in the triangle, and here's Kurt Rambis, and we're going to bring back this prehistoric offense that makes absolutely no sense in the 2010s. No sense whatsoever.
Plus, he still tinkers and runs everything, so he's screwing everything up from a distance is what he's doing.
Yeah, and then it's like, all right, if you're going to do the Derrick Rose trade, I get it. You're clearing cap space. You're admitting that maybe you should be playing for the future and not right now. You're clearing cap. You're going to make a run for the next summer. But no, then he signs Joakim Noah and Courtney Lee, so he ties up his cap space anyway. And, you know, the way he's handled the Carmelo thing, like, just as somebody who's been in the leadership position a couple times and still is, like, I just think it's catastrophic to handle your business that way. Carmelo's your best player. You've tried to embarrass him now for three solid months. You've made a point that he doesn't fit in with what you want to do. If he doesn't fit in with what you want to do, why'd you sign him? Why'd you give him a no-trade clause?
Made no sense.
What are you doing?
From day one, it made no sense.
And if you're a Knicks fan, and I know a lot of them are listening right now, like, all the Knicks fans care about is Porzingis and this lottery pick, and that's it. Those are the two things. Nothing else matters. None of these other guys really matter. Phil's going to be gone in 2 years. They'll have another coach in 2 years. Dolan will never go away because he'll probably live till he's 170. But Porzingis is the one who matters. And now you've pissed off Porzingis.
Yeah.
And now you've made it so that he doesn't really seem like he wants to be on the Knicks anymore, and with reason, because he's had a miserable two-year experience.
That's it. They've stunted his growth.
They've stunted his growth. They put him on a team with two ball hogs.
Yep.
Who never looked at him in the last 7 minutes
never,
of the game, even when he was red hot.
Never.
And here's this guy who's, if you could just create a stretch five from scratch, he's who you would create, a 7'3" guy who can protect the rim and shoot threes. And now he's mad at the team. And on top of it, they're bringing back the triangle.
Which is, listen, the whole thing is, it's horrific is what it is. It's almost as bad a nightmare as you could possibly have, and it's not going to get any better for a couple of years.
Here's the thing. You lived through this nightmare already with Scott Layden, and you lived through this nightmare already with Isaiah Thomas, and then you lived through it again with the whole weird Donnie Walsh era, and now it's the fourth time you've lived through it. And somebody emailed me, since 2002, the Sonics have more playoff wins than the New York Knicks. They have 8 playoff wins. The Knicks have 7. This is a team that disbanded in 2008, moved to Oklahoma City. They have more playoff wins than the Knicks.
Enough. I can't take anymore. I can't take anymore.
Yeah. I mean, as a Celtics fan, selfishly, I'm looking at it like, man, if Porzingis is on the table, could we get him for the Brooklyn pick? Like, I would, no matter what spot that pick is, I would trade it for Porzingis. But, you know, they've murdered the trade value of Carmelo. And if anything, they strengthened his resolve to want to stay, just to stick it to Phil.
No, I think he finally wants out. I think I would think. Although, like you said, he went into this meeting with the media the other day and completely devalued his own player. I mean, completely and utterly devalued. Before he wanted to announce he was trading him, he devalued him before he traded him.
Right. This is a guy who will really only accept a trade to like a couple teams because Phil stupidly gave him a no trade clause. And just all of it's weird. Like, why is he tweeting?
You're running
a Knicks team. Why are you on Twitter, like, doing cryptic tweets? And what's your plan? Like, are you really going to run the triangle next year? You're going to do that when we're watching a team like Houston that has figured out how to space the floor in this new wave way that nobody in Golden State and even a team like the Celtics can ride a gimmick to 53 wins, and you're going to be the team that keeps long twos alive? I just think it's insane. If I was a Knicks fan, I don't know how many columns I would have written by now.
Well, they are.
Like,
I mean,
columns.
Everyone feels that way, so everyone is that depressed. Listen, 166 losses in 3 years is all you need. We're talking with Bill Simmons So let me get back to this for a second. So you still think, right now, you can make a case for me that the Celtics can come back in the series?
Yeah, because Chicago was a 500 team all season, and a team that was, I think, 31-30 at one point, and then lost 9 of their next 12, and people were wondering if they were quitting on the floor during games. Like, yeah,
they would have to have a fight in the locker room, which is they're capable of. But I mean, they would have to have one here, because if they can stay somewhat pull in the same direction, especially with days off between games, they are going to be nightmarish in this series. They
need to. The Celts need to win one in Chicago. I think Cleveland coming back to Boston.
And throw them into some kind of fight. That would be then it would be perfect. I mean, throw them
The other frustrating thing about those first two games, which again is totally understandable because of the mood of the team, but you know, it's the playoffs and guys on the Bulls are just around the rim all the time and they're going to the basket with impunity and all this stuff. And at some point you got to remember it's the playoffs and you got to knock somebody down. I think OKC is in the same spot. OKC, it's now time to knock Lou Williams down and send him into the basket support and get a flagrant foul. And I'm not advocating violence. I'm just advocating it's the playoffs. You don't want to let people get comfortable and start feeling themselves. And, you know, it's a fight. You got to fight. So the Celtics have to fight. I am convinced after watching them for the last couple years that this is exactly the moment when they do fight. And if they don't fight in Game 3, then there's something really wrong.
It'll be fascinating to watch. And then you have the Clippers, who I've never liked. And
oh my God,
they're lucky that Utah sustained an injury. Otherwise, they would lose that series. They won't now, but they would have.
I think they still could. And if you watch I went to Game 2, so I was watching it pretty closely. You know, Utah had a bunch of chances where it's like, oh, if Joe Johnson hits this 1-3, it's a three-point game, and they have momentum. It's like every time they had a chance to make a momentum play, they missed the shot. But, you know, what's really interesting about the Clippers, and I have experience with this as, you know, a longtime Red Sox fan who still has all the pre-2004 scars, it's a crowd that just gets super tight. So even if it's Game 7 and the Clippers go into a bad stretch in the third or fourth quarter, all of these skeletons come up. It's a team that, especially during the Chris Paul era, has self-combusted over and over and over and over again in crunch time, and especially this year. So you have that, and then you have the whole history of the franchise, and you can feel it when you're at the game. Like I even, at halftime of Game 2, the guy who sits behind me was like, hey, Bill, is this going to be the last half we ever watch Blake and Chris together? And we had a serious conversation about it. It's like, yeah, if they lose this game, they're going to get swept, and these guys will never be on the
same
team.
Well, there is this thought that he's going to break this whole thing up and that Doc Rivers is going to go to Orlando and everything else. You buy into this stuff?
I actually do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I think, first of all, red flag that Orlando is being like, yeah, we're not really going to look for a GM yet. We want to see how the playoffs turn out. It's like, oh, okay.
That means Doc's already signed. Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, Doc, I think people out here in L.A. are kind of hip to some of the stuff that's been going on. To try to run the team and coach it, I think is a really tall task, but to also do that when you're playing golf 4 days a week and 5 days a week at Bel Air or these other clubs, I think that's the problem,
too.
That is
tough. Yeah, that is tough.
Yeah,
it really is.
It's like you should probably spend more time with DeAndre Jordan than Al Michaels. But shout out to Al, by the way.
Everyone likes Doc anyway, you know that.
Oh, he's the best. He's
the nicest
guy.
And you know, from someone who has played golf with him, because I did play golf with Breen and Doc, so Doc likes to play golf, as we know.
He's a great guy.
He's a wonderful guy.
By all accounts, great guy, fun to play with, but you know, from a roster standpoint.
The Clippers are worthless. Let's be honest. You want to talk about a team that's worthless. They've always been worthless. And I never would trust them with anything. Here we go. I got to get onto this. Here we go. Just came over. And it was the rumor, so now it's official. Pats host Chiefs in the opening game of the season. The Chiefs at the Pats. The first Sunday night game, which I gave you a long time ago, my audience was Giants and Cowboys again in Dallas for the season opener on Sunday night. Third straight year that will happen. Fifth time in 6 years they will meet in the week one, the Cowboys and the Giants. Fifth time in 6 years. Vikings open the season on Monday night at home against the Saints. Okay, so that's your Monday night game. I thought they were going to have the Falcons in a premier spot, but it looks like they're not. In the opening week. So that's your opening week big games. The Vikings and the Saints on Monday night, the Giants and the Cowboys on Sunday night, and the first game of the season will be the Patriots will open their season against the Chiefs.
Mike, how can we not do Guess the Lines right now? This would be the greatest moment in show history.
Here you go.
I'm ready.
Go ahead.
Pats, Chiefs. Pats by 7.5.
Pats, Chiefs. Pats, 7.5.
Done.
I'll go 8. Go ahead. What do you got? Giants, Cowboys. Giants at Cowboys.
All right. Shout out to Cousin Sal because this is his idea.
All right.
Giants, Cowboys is – that's in Dallas?
I'll go first.
Yes. Go ahead.
In Dallas, Giants at Cowboys, Dallas 6.
Dallas 6?
Yes.
So you think Eli's going to be in jail?
I'm just giving you first game of the season off their year last year. Eli's fine. He's not in any trouble. I'm telling you, that's not going to.
Okay.
Hearing Eli today, he's not in any trouble. So I just think the Cowboys, lot of early season stuff about them. Three would be the rote one, but week one, I'm going to go. It's going to be Cowboys. I think six.
I would say 4 and possibly 4.5.
Okay.
There's always Giants money in week one. I think, fortunately for Giants fans, Goodell will protect Eli from whatever happened because he loves the Mara family.
And Vikings, again, will open on Monday night at home against the Saints.
Oof.
Now, the Vikings, if
that's
you want to, last year when they were great early and then awful late, that feels to me like just a typical, Saints, probably Minnesota 4, probably something like that.
Yeah, I would say Minnesota 4.5, and I already like the Saints.
Yeah, but the one thing that Minnesota defense is good.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Sam Bradford.
The offense is just awful. I mean, just awful. And that team last year, I mean, how good were they early in the season to fall apart the way they did last year? I mean, that is just unbelievable.
It's fascinating that the GM was basically saying, you know, Bridgewater's down. We're a Super Bowl team. I'm giving up my first round pick for Bradford because I don't want to mess this up. And they weren't even close.
Yeah, well, they started off great, and then they felt their whole offensive line fell apart. I mean, completely. I mean, it was ridiculous how bad they were.
I will say this. As much as I despise the Giants with every fiber of my body, I do think if you played that Packers game 10 times, I think they win 4.
It shouldn't have fallen apart. And if they had held on,
wonky game.
Not only that, they dropped 3 touchdown passes. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Especially that first drive, they drop one in the end zone. Odell messes up one, and to give up the play at the end of the second quarter when you knew that was death. Then they stop them. They get a lucky break. They're coming. It just, I'm not convinced that they, you know, maybe 4 times, maybe even 5 times they win in Green Bay, and I don't know. Giants Atlanta would have been somewhat more interesting than Packers Atlanta.
I'll tell you right now, this I can guarantee you, and Kraft's even made this statement. That Pat's that far ahead. First of all, any coach with a brain and the Pats lose. But he said, we play in the Giants, we never win that game. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. There's no way. That game, if you're Arthur Blank, I don't know how you ever recover from that game. That was the worst coaching in the history of mankind. I mean, if you could lock the coach in a room, you win the game by 10 points.
I'm so glad you brought this up because I've watched that game. I'm going to say I've watched the second half at least 8 times now.
Don't get me started. They're not on that game.
It is a coaching catastrophe.
After the Julio Jones catch, it is impossible to lose that. If the coach didn't even think again or if he went in the locker room and hid, they would have given him the trophy.
Right.
They would have brought him the trophy.
Well, but some of it's on Matt Ryan too because if you watch the last 11 minutes closely – he's snapping the ball with 20 seconds left in the play clock. I think he gave them an extra 65 seconds.
The one thing that couldn't happen is they couldn't turn the ball over. And if they never do anything except run the ball into the line and punt, they will win the game going away.
I want you to know something, Mike, and I have witnesses. I never gave up on Tom Brady. I never gave up.
The game was over.
28-9.
The game was mathematically over.
No, it was 28-9. I was like 8-8-3. We got this. How can you give up on that?
You had to get the turnover though. Without the turnover, it's not happening.
I know, but that's the thing. When you watch the sounds of the game, and I've watched every NFL Films product that they've released of that game. And Dan Quinn's on the sidelines going, keep attacking, keep attacking. Stay
what
aggressive.
Was that about? We have to win by a big margin. What are you out of your mind? When is that the idea of winning a Super Bowl? I would have had trouble. I would have had trouble dealing with my coach after that game because there's no excuse for stupidity. That was just plain stupidity.
He gets blamed too, though. Arthur Blank gets blamed because he goes down on the sideline and the game wasn't over.
He should have gone down and got a whistle. He should have gone down and started sending in running plays. That's all he should have done. After Julio Jones makes the catch, they cut to Belichick. Belichick's looking like the game's over. He knows the game's over.
Right. You do 3 QB sneaks and kick a 40-yard field goal.
The game's over.
And it's done.
Don't get me started on that game again. Oh, it's unbelievable.
It was God's way of making up for the helmet catch, which if you really watch the helmet catch game carefully.
Which one you want? You want to say he was down at the line of scrimmage or you want to say that it was not a catch? Which one?
No, he caught it. I'm just saying that whole last drive with the four holding penalties and the helmet catch, the fact that Asante Samuel doesn't catch that interception that's just thrown right at him.
Wait a second. What about your Seattle win? I mean, are we kidding?
What? I know. I think we're even.
Are we kidding?
We're definitely even.
The last two Patriots Super Bowl wins are unbelievable. I mean, it's amazing they won those games.
Well, I think the one thing I will say that they had in common was that as the game went along, Brady's experience and his ability to just kind of wing it and just spread the field and not feel the pressure of the whole situation and just throw the ball, he's the best at it. I think Peyton Manning was also great at it. Brady's better, and he did it more times.
Brady has exhausted a pass rush and he knows it's no longer a factor, you're dead. You have to have the element that you're going to hit him because that changes how he attacks. Once he knows he has an exhausted pass rush and there's no way you might as well hide the kids because it is over. It is then completely over.
Tactically, they did the same thing in both games, right, where they have that bullet in the holster of, all right, spread the field, Brady calls it at the line, and we wing it. They know they can do that, but they try to win not doing that. They fall behind, then they have to go to that, and it works. So you could argue, like, well, should they do that the whole game, or does it work partly because it's such a monkey wrench halfway through the game the other team can't handle it? But it's unassailable, right? He's the best quarterback ever. Even you would admit that.
Again,
you take anyone over him in a big game?
Maybe Montana, that's it. Maybe Joe, because Joe was just so super instinctively cool. It was unbelievable. He was just...
Yeah, I will say with Montana, I remember being in college after one of those Super Bowls that they won by, 40.
Yeah.
And it was, over at that point. It was Joe Montana's the greatest ever. So I do think, we're seeing it now with Jordan and LeBron.
Those two. I mean, that's all you're talking about. We're talking with Bill Simmons. All right, give me something on... We covered the NFL. First of all, I can't believe you got me started on the Super Bowl because I could do a month on that Super Bowl. But
me too.
The Red Sox.
Yeah.
Good, bad, or indifferent?
They have this GM that has no problem trading great prospects for impact guys. And Chris Sale is a beast. He might be, Pedro is the best pitcher I've ever seen in my life. For Red Sox pitchers, I think Clemens is second. But Chris Sale, just the ceiling of his starts, it's already a must-watch. Chris Sale's pitching. I'm gonna watch. He's one of those guys that's it's the fourth inning. Does the other team have a hit yet? You're looking at that. That's how good he's been.
He is good. I mean, he's got great stuff. And I'll tell you, Pedro's the second best I ever saw, and the first doesn't count because he wasn't mortal, and that was Sandy in his prime. But but Pedro was, when he was in his prime, Yankee Stadium, Chili Davis.
Right.
That Pedro was just unhittable. I mean,
17 Ks and one hit against the 99 Yankees, which was their best team.
Unhittable. I mean, he was amazing. Utterly amazing. And it's funny, Chipper Jones was doing his book thing the other day, and he said Clemens was the guy because he said the one thing, he had the great stuff plus he thought on the mound. And he said most of these guys are dumb bricks on the mound. And he said he thought and had that stuff. That's why Clemens was that good. So
yeah, the Red Sox are really good. They have good bats. They had a bad break. Everyone on the
bets.
Team got sick.
How about the pretty boy left fielder? You think he's for real or what?
Benintendi?
Yeah.
You
already have a plaque to him outside the building or what? I mean,
Fredlin 2.0.
Oh, that's what I mean. He's already, and he's also the cutest, and, he's got posters up and the whole thing. So already you got that guy in the Hall of Fame, right? After 2 weeks.
I would say that, there's a chance he might be, from a sex appeal standpoint, the most beloved Boston athlete of all time. Said and done. He might be the Red Sox Joe Namath.
Every 12-year-old girl in the whole tri-state area has a picture of him, that's for sure. I mean, he's better looking than Brady.
You know what else? He's great. He's really good. He's got a great swing. He plays really hard.
You know what? He's really good.
He has no holes.
He's a good-looking player.
And Mookie's great. It's a really good Red Sox team.
No, it's a good
Yankees
team.
I was saying I had Deja Samara on my podcast yesterday, and we were talking about 97 to 04 was just this Red Sox-Yankees rivalry that you know, it was really meaningful, substantial, kind of unbelievable. And then now it's kind of dead.
Oh, yeah.
And it's dead for a bunch of reasons.
Well, not, baseball not killed it, first of all.
Stadium.
And baseball
killed
it. Yeah,
and the time, the length of the game.
Yes.
But with the guys that the Yankees have now, these young guys,
they
and the guys the Red
ones.
Sox have, yeah, it could be a rekindling.
Why not? It'd be fun. It would be a lot of fun. So tell me this before we go. Number one, final score of the series, Boston-Chicago is what? I'm fascinated by this series. So go ahead.
I think Chicago wins in six. I think it's too hard to blow the
I'm going
to
say five.
At home unless
I'm going to say five. So go ahead. Okay, so you don't think they're going to come all the way back?
And I think Houston wins in five.
Oklahoma City win one game by like 30, and that's the only game they'll win. Yeah,
there will be a game where Westbrook fouls everyone on the other team. Out.
Right, he'll win. No, that one game years. Where they'll put everybody in the second and the third quarter, and then they'll lose by 35. But that'll be the only game they lose.
Yeah,
I agree with that one.
Now let me ask you this:
go ahead.
If they get swept and Westbrook wins the MVP, is that awkward?
No, I don't count the postseason. I really don't. But the MVP's gotten silly because LeBron's the best player, but now we're going to go on the statistical analysis and pick Westbrook over Harden. And I guess it's okay, but they just decided somewhere along the way they didn't want LeBron to win any more MVPs. I don't know why they decided that, but he's always still been the most valuable player. I just don't know why they decided along the way they weren't going to give him any more.
Yeah, I wrote a big column about this last week. I picked Harden, but I have these four questions that I try to stick with, like when I try to sort out in my head who the MVP is, because I think it's important. I think it's a document of the history of the league. And LeBron has been the answer to this question since 2008. If the aliens, it's the Bob Ryan question, if the aliens land and they challenge us to a 5-on-5 game for the future of the universe, who do you pick first? And it's LeBron. It's like, all right, we got LeBron. Who are the four?
It's not even close.
That's it.
It's not even close.
And it hasn't been close since 2008. And, you know, that's why it's like, oh, yeah, I couldn't vote for him for MVP because of how Cleveland died as the season went along, especially down the stretch. I just feel like if you have LeBron and Kyrie, that's 55 wins. I don't care who else is on your team. Kyrie is unbelievable. He's as good as John Wall. You know, just to have those two.
He is a great
32 games.
He couldn't guard you, but he is as good a penetrating guard as there is in the sport.
But I have a newsflash for you. John Wall can't really guard anyone either. The German guy's running amok on him these first two games. John Wall's not a great defender.
But he can defend, though, if he chooses to. He is athletic enough. Irving's not a defending anybody, but I tell you, off the dribble and to the basket, he's as good as it gets. How good do you think the freak is?
I think it was just funny.
Compare him to somebody.
You can't. It's impossible. It would be like, I guess you would compare it to Julius Erving from the ABA in 1974 if he grew 5 inches and his fingers were twice the size and Dr. J had like the biggest hands of all time. He's so unconventional and so unorthodox and so talented. It was funny to watch other people who haven't really seen the Bucks.
And what did he get picked? 15th? What was he, 15th in the draft? 14th?
Yeah, he may or may not have gotten picked right after Kelly Olynyk.
When you think about that, now maybe, listen, I don't know. That's what I always say when people ask me about the NBA draft and we're talking about Bill Simmons. I always say to the fans, listen, I don't know who's in Europe. So I'll just go on by the guys I've seen in college, because when they show up with a Porzingis or they show up with the Greek freak, it blows everything out of the water. I don't know these guys who are over there in Europe. So I don't
see those guys.
Yeah.
I did that draft for ESPN.
Right.
And Jalen and I were, I think, one of our hotel rooms watching the freak on YouTube, and it looked like he was playing as ninth graders. And we're just like, yeah, he looks great, but how old is the other? Like, it's impossible.
Well, how did he get picked that low?
The question at the time was, did he get picked too high?
No.
it seemed like it was fool's gold in a lot of ways. It was a guy who, you know, had really not played anybody whatsoever, and there was questions about whether he could get out of Greece and, you know, it was right around the spot.
Do you think Porzingis can have a better career than the Greek freak?
No, I think Giannis is going to win the MVP someday. I would lock that down. If nothing happens to him from an injury standpoint, that guy is going to win the MVP.
I think Porzingis. I think he can be that good, Porzingis. If they would just build the team around him, he should be able to get 8 to 10 on the foul line a night before the game starts, before the national anthem. He's 7'3".
Here's the thing that if I was a Knicks fan, it's not in the top 10 of things that I go nuts about, but it's up there. They could have had Rubio for Rose. That was sitting there. Rubio, for some reason, Rubio and Rondo have just – people decided they were completely worthless with the way basketball's going. And these are guys that know how to get the ball to the right people if they have the right teammates. To me, it's like you just got to get Rubio. Like, you just have to. So what? He's making $13 million a year next year, the year after. Like, great. You're paying Courtney Lee $15 million anyway, and Joakim Noah $17 million.
It's like
you have cap space. Just do it. But you want to surround Porzingis with people who are going to try to make him better. Derrick Rose is the opposite. He's a one-man show. He's like Westbrook last night. You know,
you put him in pick and roll, and then you also give him just one little shoulder turn off the low block. He could be unstoppable. He's 7'3". He's 7'3", and he can shoot.
Yeah.
And he's got a great shooting touch. He's got a great touch.
And you left out the key part. He doesn't hurt you on the other end.
No.
Kelly Olynyk can look good every once in a while, but he murders the Celtics on the other end as the stretch five. Porzingis can actually protect the rim.
He's got a little bit of toughness in him. He really does. He could be a great player. It's just that it's wasting away quickly. It really is. It's kind of sad.
I think the Knicks fans here's my advice. I said this on my podcast yesterday. I think we've now reached a point where we have to do like those benefit videos that they did in the 80s, like the We Are the World type things. All the Knicks fan celebrities have to get together and actually do a song to try to get Dolan to sell the team.
He's not going to sell the thing. They are so successful, it's unbelievable. You know, he turned the team over to Jackson, and people loved it. It just Jackson sold him a bill of goods.
He definitely did.
He did.
And then he exercised the option, which I thought was equally insane because James Dolan, he does something admirable. Like he says, well, look, I hired that guy. He said that on the Yes Network. Yeah. I hired that guy. I stick to my guns. I make a deal.
That's
My word is oak.
He would not back off the deal. That's true. He won't do that.
Okay. So let's hold that thought for a second.
Yep.
This is a guy. How many heads of MSG has James Dolan had? He said like 10. He fires people all the time. Yeah. He can't fire Phil Jackson, but he fires everybody at MSG and all these other
places. He stuck by Sather all those years, and it turned out okay for him with the hockey team, though. You know, and he left them alone. You know, but I tell you something, Sather at least did a job eventually and started putting a winning team out there. Jackson, you know, I really think Jackson sold him a bill of goods.
I think he sold him a bill of goods. I think he thought he was going to get Steve Kerr as his coach, and I think Steve Kerr was very close to coming.
Best decision of all time when you think about it.
He had this fork in the road choice.
How good is that?
Yeah, you turn left and you're basically going in on concrete wall.
166 losses or a couple of championships. Nice fork in the road.
And by the way, that was a big deal for him because Phil was like his mentor and his sounding board, and he wanted to work with Phil Jackson. He looked at the assets they had, the roster they had, the thought of trying to make a Carmelo situation work in this decade when the ISO ball thing just doesn't work as well as it used to, and then also the management. And he was just like, I'd rather be with Joe Lacob and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Like, I have a better chance to win. The Knicks, this is the other thing that, you know, the Knicks have really lost prestige this century.
Oh,
you know, LeBron.
You got to win. You got to win eventually, otherwise it doesn't work.
Their name doesn't mean anything. Like LeBron turns them down. Everybody thought LeBron was going to New York, myself included. Durant doesn't even give him a meeting. You know, it's just they're at a really bad place, and he'll never sell. He will never sell.
Listen, the Garden is worth a fortune. He couldn't listen. Yeah. They're making a fortune, so that's not the case. All right, I gotta go. Listen, we'll do this again because otherwise, I gotta get a couple of commercials in. So, and one
I'm
we
here.
Should tell him is Ringer.com.
TheRinger.com.
That's where they
should
go. Yeah,
that's where you can read me, listen to all the podcasts.
TheRinger.com.
Thanks, Mike.
See you. Bye.
All right.
Bill Simmons.
Bye-bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.